In the summer of 2023, Maine Public partnered with StoryCorps in a Military Voices initiative to capture the stories of Maine veterans who served in the armed forces. During the recording sessions, veterans shared details about their tours of duty and how their time in the military affected both their lives and those of their loved ones. This limited podcast series is dedicated to these Maine veterans and their families. We want to thank them for sharing moments of their lives with us. I'm Keith Shortall. Let's get started. Episode 6, Brothers and Sisters. Staff Sergeant Timothy Allen Drake, or Sarge to his fellow service members, joined the Marine Corps in 1987. He served a total of 26 years, in which he was deployed 15 times, four of those in active combat. He also wore multiple uniforms, serving in three different branches of the U.S. Armed Forces. Sarge is a dedicated soldier, but he's also a person who finds motivation in helping others and supporting his family, not only those to whom he's related, but to those with whom he served. This is Sarge's story.
My name is Timothy Allen Drake, otherwise known as Sarge. My age is 54 years old.
Hi, I'm Mackenzie Dorval. I'm 29 years old. I'd like to start off with why you joined the Marine Corps.
Why I joined the Marine Corps? Growing up as a little kid, it was instilled in me about service beyond myself. Honestly, there isn't one particular thing that kind of struck me as my initial motivation, but I can remember back as early as my junior high school time frame when I just, for whatever reason, decided that I needed to join the Marine Corps. That mantra just stayed with me until I was in high school. The more and more I did research and learned about the Marine Corps, the more and more I feel I wanted to join that and do my service, because I felt that military service was going to be what I wanted to do, and I felt that if I was going to join the military, I wanted to join the most badass group there ever was, and that would be the Marine Corps. And then I kind of dumbed it down from there and said, okay, what is the most badass part of the Marine Corps? And that would have been the infantry.
Right.
So therefore, I decided to join the infantry, so much so that I had my recruiter I bugged for 2 years before I was even eligible to join because of my age. And when I was eligible, your grandmother, Grammy Joan, had to sign a waiver because of my age to allow me to join. And I had him guarantee me something that was like breathing oxygen. I had him guarantee me infantry in the Marine Corps. And he did. And so I ended up joining the Marine Corps.
Was there a specific person that influenced you while you were in the Marines?
While I was in the Marines, certainly was. My first battalion commander was James Norman Mattis. Most people today would recognize him as General Mattis, who used to be our Secretary of Defense under President Trump. He was my battalion commander during the first Persian Gulf War, and I was in the first time I was ever in combat was under his command and beside his side. And later on in different conflicts and everything else, we would serve together again.
And how many years did you serve in the Marine Corps?
I did a total of 10 years in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. Part of that time frame, because of a B billet, I also was 2 years as a recruiter. And that's where I met your mother, when I was home on recruiting duty in Waterville, Maine, during the early 90s.
How many deployments did you serve with the Marine Corps?
I was two combat deployments and two non-combat deployments with the Marine Corps.
And not only in the Marine Corps, you were also in the Air Army next, was that right?
Correct. So I did 10 years in the Marine Corps, and then there was various different reasons for my decisions. Most of it dealt with family and children and my desire to be closer to them. I basically, if you want to use the term, jump ship, got out of the Marine Corps and ended up joining the Army for 4 years.
Then you jump ship
then
again?
Then I jumped ship from the Army.
But wasn't there a pause?
No, there was a pause between the Marine Corps and the Army. But
okay.
From the Army, I ended up joining the Air Force, and I was in the Air Force for 12 years. And then I retired with a total military service, active duty service time of 26 years.
How many deployments did you do total under all those three branches?
15 deployments total. Four of them were combat tours.
What were the combat tours? Give an example of where you were stationed.
So Iraq a couple times, Afghanistan, and then obviously the Persian Gulf War was Saudi Arabia and Kuwait.
Can you describe how you felt coming home from one of your combat tours? Maybe your first one, and where was it?
So my first combat tour, like I said, was with Lieutenant Colonel Mattis at the time, first Gulf War, Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Iraq. Basically, I was in the 1st Battalion, 7th Marines, Task Force Ripper, and I was in the H&S Stay Platoon, which is a sniper platoon. My first understanding and experience with combat, some people can understand, some people don't, but it was basically a baptism by fire. It was just a, can't prepare for it, just happens. And for me, I was able to have an epiphany moment where I realized that everything did not evolve around me, that whether I lived or died, in the grand scheme of everything, what mattered was that I needed to do, my best so that my friends and my buddies could do their job. And by them doing their job, we all got to come home.
Is there anyone that you served with that you remember fondly, and can you tell me about him or her?
Lance Corporal Brian Lane. He died during the first Gulf War. That's all I'm going to say about that one. He's not here. I am. I'm the lucky one.
So did you meet good friends on your deployments?
I did. There's a common thing that people in the military say, and people that aren't in the military hear those that are say, and that's like I refer to people that I served with as my brothers and sisters. I think maybe that's lost on those that don't understand that moniker that's given, because in today's society, people who have brothers and sisters may not get along with them, or they do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but let's just think about if you do get along with a brother and sister that you have, how much love and how much compassion and what you would do for them to protect them and help them. That feeling times 100 is how veterans feel about those that they've served with. Because there's a time during their service, whether it's war or not, that personal sacrifices are given. And they know that in order for them to thrive and survive and, let's say, accomplish a mission, or even just to be able to get through the day, you need to rely on your brothers and sisters that you're serving with. Because if they're healthy, if they're good to go, then they can help watch out for you. And if that's not the case, then you're on your own. And that's the most scary thing ever, whether you're in the military or not. Nobody wants to ever be on their own.
Can you tell me about the second combat that you were deployed to?
So that would be Iraq. For various reasons, countries decide to go to war with other countries. You're pitted against an enemy that you're told is your enemy. You've never met them. You've never known much about them. But you're there being part of the military. That's basically your job, right? It comes down to you or them in a combat scenario. And so, therefore, you do everything you can to make sure it's you that comes back home. I had a really unique scenario happen to me. So during the first Gulf War, during my first combat tour, there was an airbase that we attacked in Kuwait. Obliterated it, overcame it, took some POWs, moved on from there. Years later, like many years later, I'm in the Air Force. I'm deployed to Iraq again. We were training the Iraqis to take over control of their own airbase, meaning we were going to be the last Americans there. They were going to take over their own base. One of the Iraqis that we were training, I'm looking at him, and he's like, wow, I'm like, this guy's got to be like my age. And so we just started talking, and he says, yeah. He's like, man, when I was a young guy, you guys came in during the first Gulf War, and basically I almost died during that one when I was at this airbase. Come to find out, he was my enemy during that war at that battle. 20-plus years later, we're allies, and I'm training him to take over his own base. So here's my point to this whole thing. Countries tell you who you hate and who you want to go to war with and all that stuff, and you do that for your duty, and there's reasons for it, and there's whether you agree or disagree, it's what it is. But things change. You know, look at World War II. We're allies with Germany now. We're allies with Japan. All that stuff changes. But in the moment, you're there for what your government sends you to do, but you're there for, more importantly, for your buddies on your left and your right. My military service is a little bit different than most, where I've served a good amount of time in three different branches of the military. I will say that my overall experience and my overall motivation for wanting to serve stayed the same. My dedication to the country, my dedication to the people of our country, that's where I was at. And I've always been a firm believer, and it's the same thing you'll hear almost every veteran tell you, that politics has no place in the military. And I firmly believe that I fought for and helped defend the right for somebody to vote and do and think what they want, even if it completely disagrees with what I think and believe. To me, that is the pinnacle of what our country was based on and what it needs to be. I would rather have somebody, when it comes to politics, vote completely opposite of me, but still vote, rather than somebody not vote, because I have brothers and sisters that aren't here today because they were defending that right for that person to do that. But my motivation for joining and everything else, I think it stayed the same. In retirement, I miss the camaraderie. That's one of the things you'll hear a lot of veterans talk about, and it's the same for me, the camaraderie with being very close to my brothers and sisters that I served with. But nonetheless, I'm also grateful for now being retired and receiving the benefits that I do get now from this.
Is there anything that you wish civilians would understand more about the military service?
The right to disagree. It's okay to disagree. I wish everybody could understand that just because you have a difference of opinion does not mean you need to hate that person. It just means you don't agree, and you can talk more about it or you don't have to talk more about it. But it's okay to disagree with somebody. It's actually healthier because then you can actually try to understand each other. And it doesn't mean anybody's right, and it doesn't mean anybody's wrong. You don't have to agree with people, but service to others is where it's at.
I'm proud of you. And I love you.
I love you too, more than I could ever express.
As Mahatma Gandhi said, the best way to find yourself is to get lost in the service of others, as demonstrated by Staff Sergeant Timothy Drake. In our next episode of Military Voices of Maine, we'll meet Quartermaster Stephen Simons, a World War II veteran who served in the Navy as a submariner. He'll tell the stories of his travels across Australia by railroad to meet his ship in Perth, and harrowing engagements with the enemy at sea. Military Voices of Maine is brought to you by a partnership with Maine Public and StoryCorps, as well as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This podcast series was made possible through the generous support of Lee Auto Malls, Wreaths Across America, and FedCap Maine. The series was produced by Allison New and Keith Shortall. That's me. You can listen to this podcast and others like it on our website, mainepublic.org, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.